What a privilege to come into God's presence, just to linger with the one who set me free. As I lift my eyes and see his awesome glory, I remember who he is and bow the knee. Bow the knee, bow the knee. He is King of all the ages, bow the knee. God alone on his throne. See him high and lifted up and bow the knee. He holds the power of creation. With his voice he spoke and all things came to be. Yet he hears the simple prayer I bring before him, when I humbly seek his face and bow the knee. Bow the knee, bow the knee. He is King of all the ages, bow the knee. God alone on his throne. See him high and lifted up and bow the knee. Kneel before him, all adore him. As you live to love him more,
let's head over to Genesis chapter 32. Genesis chapter 32. As you go there, I would just ask that you be in prayer for the Wormleys. If you remember where they're at, they're in Kenya. And we've actually got three missionary families in Kenya. We've got the Steinbarts. And then which are in Nakuru, I believe is how you pronounce it. And then you've got the Simonsons, which are over in Thika. And then you've got the Wormleys, which are over in Mombasa. Now, the Wormleys are in the midst of a little transition, which I think is totally awesome. If you remember back to their time that they were here with us, he had talked about how he was working alongside of an older man who really took leadership in what they were doing, and especially in administration, and he had passed away, and it left a huge hole. And so what they were trying to do was, he and another co-worker, a younger guy from what I understand, was going to try to, instead of trying to put another American in charge of everything, they wanted to hand everything over to Kenyans. Which is awesome. This is exactly what we're trying to do. That's what we want to do. We don't want just Americans to go over and to be doing things. We want to train so that they can do it for themselves. And I don't know if you realize this, but the Wormleys were helping out and administrating over 9 different Bible institutes and then one Bible college in Mombasa. But they were also over 300 plus churches in Kenya and Uganda. So it's just, it's amazing. I mean, can you imagine trying to keep up with all of those? It's just crazy. So now that they're transitioning, I had talked to him because he's always wanted us to come over for a mission trip. So I'm looking for next year. And I talked to him and he says, well, you know what? If you would have contacted me in the last 3 years, I would have plenty for you to do. But we're changing things. As they are transitioning everything over to Kenyan leadership, they are actually looking to go into another country that's just north of Kenya. and which is basically a closed country. Basically, this is how he described it. He says, if your team is okay with death threats, then they might be able to make it. So I guess we'll have to put that in the fine print for next year. I'm just kidding. I told my wife, I looked over at her and I said, well, if I'm going, you're not. Okay? So we want to make sure that one is still here. But there's just be in prayer for that. Okay? So we think of it as, oh, that's an automatic. We're not sending a team because of the threats that are there. But yet we have a missionary who's committed to going where it could be a struggle, discomfort. It could be a challenge to his life. It's insecure. I mean, all of these things, we have a missionary who's committed to doing that. This is the same guy that while he was here in the United States and all those riots were going on in the United States, this is the same guy who went into the city to go and to minister to those people. I don't know if you knew that. Our missionary, while he was here, went in and was sharing the gospel with those people who were throwing bricks through windows, throwing things at the police, all those things. He was there sharing the gospel. Isn't that awesome? God has given him strength to be able to do something like that. So as I shared that, and you know, as we think, oh, we can't go because it's scary, our missionary is willing to go to a place where it is scary, but the gospel still needs to be presented. So just be in prayer about that and what's going on there. And I know it's a heavy transition. And he is a good friend of mine. So I really do care about this missionary and his family. He's got three young kids. You know, just think about that. But what he's willing to do for the sake of the cause of Christ. So just be in prayer for that whole entire situation. They're trying to do their evangelistic efforts, starting with online, because there's a whole lot of opportunity there. I've got other missionary friends that are in Muslim countries that online is actually a very awesome route to be able to be evangelistic. And so just help by praying for these situations and keep them on your thoughts. As far as, you know, if you wake up in the middle of the night, think our missionaries, pray for them, because, you know, our missions team, they're 7 hours ahead. So they're in the middle of the night right now. So when you're in the middle of your sleep and you wake up and you think, well, what am I going to do? Just sit here. Pray for our missions team. Okay. Pray for our missionaries, because they're in a totally different time zone and they're in the action right in that moment. So I know that's a totally different side note. That is not the sermon, but I just wanted you to keep your thoughts and mind focused on what God is doing all the way around the world for the sake of his gospel. So as we focus here, I told you, keep your thoughts on He is Able, but also Bow the Knee was an absolutely perfect song to go into this passage. So we've got a lot ahead of us, so just put your seatbelts on. I know last time that I preached, you said, I don't think you took a breath. We might not take a breath again tonight. We're going to be moving, okay? So hopefully that'll keep you awake as well. So as we get into this, Jacob, if you remember the context, Jacob got away from his father-in-law, okay? Which for some of you, you're thinking, oh, great application. I need to get as far away from my father-in-law as possible. That's not good application, okay? You miss the entire boat if that's your application from that passage. But what he needed to do was get back to the land that God had promised. It was so important for him to do that, because what was contingent upon him getting back to the land, if he was to go back to the land, then that blessing would continue as God has given it to him. The same God of Abraham, the same God of Isaac, is the same God of Jacob. And God was going to bless Jacob if he, once he got back to the land, that would continue. So here he's going. So he jumped out of, what was that saying? Something about jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. Is that how you say it? That's exactly what he's doing here, because as soon as he jumps back in the land of promise, He knows that he still has to face the consequences of his sin, of his deception. He's got to face the issues. I wonder what's going on through his mind. Have you ever had to face the consequences? I mean, you've been running, and all of a sudden, God is giving you the opportunity to take care of the sin that you have committed in the past and to make it right with someone. And here he is going back to the land where his brother has stated that he will kill him. And it seemed like Isaac was totally okay with it. Because if you remember when Isaac tried to give somewhat of a blessing as much as he could to Esau, what did he say? Here, you're going to have a sword in your hand and you're going to conquer those that are over you. And so this is something that, oh man, crazy application. There are consequences to every decision that we make. And sometimes we might not have to face those consequences right now, but we will have to at some point. And so that's something to be thinking about. But what we find here is that God is stripping away Jacob's self-reliance. He is a strategist. I mean, if he was to play the game Monopoly, he would whoop us all. If he was to play Stratego or Risk, he would whoop us all because he is a schemer. Now, he might be cheating on his way there, okay, because that's the way Jacob did it growing up. But God is stripping away those old ways and presenting this new way of completely have faith in God for everything that's coming. Bow the knee, for one thing, because he is able to carry us through. You get where the song's coming from now? And so as we jump into this, we need to understand that faith must be in God alone. So here's the weird part. In the midst of this chaos, in the midst of leaving his father-in-law in the craze of that situation, his wife stealing his father-in-law's idols and being caught up with and then having to get out of that situation. Finally, they had some reconciliation, but his wife still has idols. There's a problem. He's going back to the land where his brother's at, who could kill him, and he knows that. And yet, all of a sudden, this unknown figure shows up into the situation. Now, if you've been in this passage before, which if you've been to Sunday school for any length of period of time, especially in the children's groups, you have heard this story, this real story. Now, when I say story, don't think of it as being fictional, okay? It is a true story, a narrative that has been presented here that we can look to, but this unknown figure shows up. How do we respond to this unknown figure? How does Jacob respond to this unknown figure? So let's jump into it in the first point. Here we have the offering. The offering. So in verses 1 through 5, let's work through this. And Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. That's interesting. Okay? And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host." And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Okay? We took it slow. We used our phonics. I don't know if it worked out very good, but the elementary teachers will tell me afterwards. Okay? So as we see this, all of a sudden, they're making their way back to the promised land, and Jacob sees a host of God's angels there. What is that? Why? Well, honestly, we have no idea. We got to know. Do we? You go into verse 3, and Jacob sent messengers before him, and just automatically jumps right into the next phase. Ho, wait a minute. There's got to be another verse in there somewhere. No. What God had put in front of him was a reminder. Now, you'll see why as we go along. It says, "And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom." So he's sending guys ahead to his brother to hopefully communicate a message. And he commanded them, saying, "Thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau." You see what just happened there? And how he described his brother, "My lord Esau." He is submitting himself underneath Esau, even though the blessing has come to him. "And thy servant Jacob said thus, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now, and I have oxen and donkeys, flocks and men servants and women servants, and I have sent to tell my Lord that I might find grace in thy sight. Okay, I'm sending you this offering to hopefully have some sort of a reconciliation. I have been blessed. Here's an offering. And here's my servants here. And go and tell them this peace offering. What was the response? I love this response. This is a typical older brother, right? What happens? The messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee." Oh, he comes to meet. With who? And 400 men with him. Not so good. Remember the same guy that said he's going to kill him is coming with 400 men. And Jacob's got his family with all four of his, well, he's got two wives and two concubines. I guess that's how you classify them, with all of his children and all of his stuff. Okay. Now, how do you prepare for battle if this is what's going to happen with all of this stuff? So he jumps in here with a desperate strategy. Okay, I know we're moving right through these points, but you're thankful because of how many points we've got. We're moving so fast. All right. We have this desperate strategy. Point number three in verses 7-8. It says, "Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed." Wouldn't we all be? "And he divided the people that was with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two bands." So all of a sudden he's jumping into a strategy because that's who Jacob is. I mean, he's the one that tries to create the plan to take care of his stuff. His family. He separated them all into two bands and said, "If Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape." So we're just going to go with 50-50 odds. Aren't you thankful you don't go to Vegas and try to go with these odds, right? Okay. By the way, if you're trying to go into the slot machines and trying to win money through there, I guarantee you I can make more money for you. Then I know pastors presented this before, right? You spend $100, you might get 20 back. He says, "Well, you know, give me $100, I'll give you 20 back. That'll work with me, right?" Okay, but this is kind of risky here, and this is where he's saying, "Listen, I'm going to put one band over here and one band over there, and if he comes and kills all these people, hopefully these people can run." But you know, that really isn't going to work out so great, because if Esau and his 400 men are coming to smite them, then they're coming equipped when Jacob really isn't. Remember, because he had run away from Laban. It's not like he had prepared for war. He was already on the run. And so all of the, "Hey, let's get out overnight and just kind of throw everything together to get out of here before Laban can get here." They finally made it away from Laban to this point where Esau is coming to greet them. So here it is, the desperate prayer. And this is where I believe that God is starting to strip away his self-reliance and starting to help him understand how much he needs God. He goes on here in this desperate prayer, and Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord which saith unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee." So what is he doing? He's going back on the promises that God has made, back on the history that God has given and already proved himself. And here he is saying, "God, all that you've done, I'm relying on you right now. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff, I have passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands." So here's the situation. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy of all the truth that you've given me. I'm not worthy of all the mercies that you've put on display. Jacob is understanding what he was and seeing what God has done with him. It's going right back to the message from this morning of seeing what we were and how we should respond based on what we were because of what God is doing in our lives. And he says, deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And so here it is, this promise that you've given us, that we are going to thrive, that my children are going to have more children, and their children are going to have more children, and we're going to be, the descendants are going to be as the sands of the sea. God, I'm relying on your promises. I trust in you. Okay? We are frail human beings, and we need to come to that understanding that we can't do life on our own. And there's some scary situations. The one that I was just relaying to you about my good friend who is going to be in a rough situation. Now, will he live long into his older years and nothing ever happened to him? Sure, that could happen. But yet there is also the risk of, God, if I'm going to do what you've called me to do, God, take care of me. He's coming to the end of himself. Maybe we should have titled it that way, but I really like the title of God Strives, and you'll understand why as we go forward. So here we go into point number 5. We have the cushion effect. And I love this. Get the picture in your mind let's say that you can do this when you go home. Okay, as long as you have permission from mom, kids, right? Okay, you take one of the couch cushions and you tie it on your the front, and then you take one and you tie it to the back of you, okay? And then run full force into your sibling. Now, what happens to them? Well, who cares? I'm okay. The cushion has helped me out, right? Okay, now get permission from your parents. I don't want to hear anything, you know, Troy. Okay, about you breaking your sister's arm or something. Okay, all right. You ask your mother. Okay, but that understanding of the cushion effect. I'm trying to get that picture in your mind. It says, and he lodged there the same night and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother, 200 she goats and 20 he goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams. You thought, how did God prosper him under Laban? This is it. He's handing a ton of things as a gift over to Esau. 30 milch camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 she-asses and 10 foals. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, pass over before me and put a space betwixt drove and drove. So he wanted this separation between each one, because as Esau was coming up and meeting one, then hopefully it would pacify him and come up and meet another one, servants with more animals. And he wants all this space. So hopefully, after giving him so many things, that he would just get tired of wanting to kill Jacob. And so here it is, the cushion effect. Verse 17, and he commanded the foremost, saying, when Esau my brother meeteth thee and asketh thee, saying, whose art thou, and whither goest thou, and whose are these before thee, then thou shalt say, they be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau. And behold, also he is behind us. So he's still back there, but here's a present for you, Esau. And so commanded he the second and the third and all that followed the drove, saying, on this manner shall ye speak unto Esau when ye find him. And say ye moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us, for he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face, peradventure he will accept of me. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. So they did exactly as Jacob stated. He provided the cushion effect, and there was a separation between him and all the gifts that he had laying down the road. And he rose up that night and took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford Jabbok. Okay, passed over it, and he took them and sent them over the brook, and sent over that he had. So all these gifts, separate, all until he got to his family. And then he sent them over to where they would even be more separated from what was to come. Do you see Jacob growing up a little bit? Starting to see the seriousness of life. Starting to understand what is important. What are the priorities? And so here we find the turning point in verse 24. And here's when we get into an interesting situation. In his turning point, all of a sudden, Jacob was left alone. And there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. Really, Jacob? You're getting ready for a battle. You're getting ready for Esau to come and to take you out. And you're sitting there wrestling with a guy you don't even know. Get your head in the game. It's like you're getting ready for church. And then all of a sudden, remember back for some of you when you had children at home. Two of your children decide to wrestle in their dress clothes. They're like, come on, seriously? Mature it up. You know, they're 5 and 2. But anyway, come on, bring some maturity to the table. We got something serious ahead of us. Okay? It's not time to paint. It's not time to do all these other, no slime right now, right before the service. I mean, this is kind of I'm trying to get you in a thought process here, okay? He was left alone, and there he's wrestling until the break of day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. So this unknown figure saw that he wasn't going to win, and yet he touched Jacob's thigh. All of a sudden, it's out of joint. So in verse 26, and he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. He is a stubborn individual, I'll tell you what. Here it is, this unknown guy wrestling with him. The unknown guy says, well, I'm not going to win, so I'm going to press this spot on his thigh. And all of a sudden, boom, he's disjointed. And Jacob, disjointed, just hanging on. I'm just envisioning that he's got him by the leg. You know, he got him by the leg. It's like me trying to go to work in the morning. All of a sudden, my kids, no, this happened to me this morning. Reagan ran to the gate. Okay, we've got gates different because we got a puppy, all right? So you have to gate everything off. And she, I said, I got to go to church. No! She runs over to the gate and gets in front of it. Lucky for me, I have 2 doors. And I tell her, I warn her, I'm going to the other door. No! And she's running over there. She knows that she's not going to make it. And so she starts crying, you know, because that's what girls do. All right? They don't get their way, they cry. All right? I don't know how it works, but that's how God made them, right? And so that's... My wife doesn't do that, though, right? And so so Ken, on the other hand, he'll be on the other side. You know what he does? When he wants to keep me there, he attaches himself to my leg. All right? And he sits on my shoe. Y'all remember how that works? Okay? All right? And so then you're trying to go like this, you know? And this is all that I'm imagining, is that Jacob here is just trying to hold on as much as possible in pain. And he's saying, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. Now, what does Israel mean? Mean God, it means God fights, God persists, God strives. There's where our title comes from. It's God working. It says, for as a prince, thou hast power with who? God and with men. I mean, he's a prince. So who's the king? God. Okay, with God and with men, and hast prevailed. And Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name, and he blessed him there. So why are you asking me, okay, what my name is? But Jacob wants to know. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. Why? It says, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Light bulb. Aha! It's God. You say, well, why couldn't God win against Jacob? Did you ask that question? Here it is, God wrestling in human form with Jacob. How come he can't win? Have you ever tried to wrestle your kid? I'm in kid mode. Some of you are out of kid mode. I understand you got grandkids. You can still win over grandkids, right? Unless you're one of those that let your grandkids win. I don't let my kids win. Deal with it. I'm dad. I win all the time. That's how it's going to work. But you know what? When we wrestle, I don't just whoop them right at the beginning. I let them mess with me. I let them think that they can win. See, they're in here. They're listening to me. They're like, what is he doing here? I'm bigger than them. I can take them on. Now, all three, they're starting to get a little heavy. Okay? All right? All right? Because they were all three on me yesterday. And it's like, wow, this is taking a little bit more from my system. I'm getting older. You know how that works, right? And here it is. You know, you let them play around. You let them think that they can win. And God, at any moment, and that's exactly what he did. All he did was touched his thigh. When he was done, God finished it. You get the point? Don't take application from this saying, oh, good job, Jacob. I need to start wrestling with God more often. Maybe I'll get more of what I want. That's not the point. You've been totally distracted this entire time. If that's the point that you're getting out of this, the point is, here it is, that God is showing what's happening here of, hey, we can wrestle, but listen, I'm going to win, because all of a sudden he changes his name and says, hey, listen, you're Israel, because God strives. God fights. God persists. And here, the only reason why you have anything is because of God. And any moment, he can shut it off. Any moment, he can start it up. That's the way that our God works. He is sovereign. That's what we can rely on. That's what we can trust in. And Jacob, do you get this? He steps back and he says, I have seen God face to face. Now, obviously, it wasn't in his full glory. We understand that because we know that Moses saw a glimpse of the backside of God, and yet he started glowing like he had some radiation going on, okay? Here it is. God allowed this in a brief time period to show up in front of Jacob, and Jacob is just amazed that he saw God face to face. And he didn't die. I'm still here. I still have a purpose. And as he passed over Peniel, the sun rose up upon him and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore, the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day. So there was a dietary law that came into being. Because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh and the sinew that shrank. Okay? All this comes into play. He wrestles in all this situation. God shows up. And really the point is not to get distracted with all the weird things that happened there, but the fact that God showed up and just proved himself that he can start it up when he wants to and he can stop it when he wants to. He's in charge. And that's where we come in here, to where there it is. God fights. He does. He's the one that fights the battles. And we see that through these next 20 verses. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, And behold, Esau came. So after he's been wrestling all night long, here it is, ready for round two. Esau came, and with him 400 men, and he divided the children unto Leah, and unto Rachel, and unto the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and I'll put you in the front to sacrifice you first, okay? All right? And then Leah and her children, okay? Still got the cushion effect. And then Rachel and Joseph hindermost. And he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. Seven, the idea of completion. Perfect. In the sense of he's coming and he's submitting himself to Esau. He's humbling himself before him. And Esau ran to meet him and punched him in the face. Now, this is the irony. This is what blows our minds. He embraced him, fell on his neck, and kissed him. That's different for us culturally, right? And they wept. Real men don't cry. These guys did. Can you imagine the emotions? Years. A couple of decades have passed, not being able to see each other. The unknowns, the fears, and all of a sudden these two guys come together and finally embrace. And they're able to work it out. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, "Who are those with thee?" And he said, "The children which God hath graciously given thy servant." You love how he says that? Oh, this is all that I did. Check out all my kids. This was all my plan. No, these are the children that God's given me. Then the handmaidens came near, they and their children, and they bowed themselves. And Leah also with her children came near and bowed themselves. And after came Joseph near and Rachel, and they bowed themselves. And he said, "What meanest thou by all this drove which I meant?" All these cushions that you've had going on here, what do you mean by this? And he said, "These are to find grace in the sight of my Lord." You just find grace in your sight. And Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. I'm content. Keep that thou hast unto thyself." And Jacob said, "Nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand. For therefore I have seen thy face as though I have seen the face of God. And thou wast pleased with me." I've seen it, and I'm just laying it out here. You take it anyway. "Take, I pray thee, my blessing that has brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough." And he urged him, and he took it. When we finally find contentment in God, that's enough. Remember I said, don't take as application, "I need to wrestle with God." Take this as application. This is a principle that spans the test of time. When I become content with God, that is enough. It's enough. And he said, "Let us take our journey and let us go, and I will go before thee." And he said unto him, "My Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and herds with young are with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die." So Esau wants Jacob to go with him. But Jacob's like, no, these kids can't handle that kind of a journey that fast. So we're going to hang out and we're going to take it slow while you can go as fast as you want. "Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant. I will lead on softly, according as the cattle that goeth before me, and the children be able to endure until I come unto my Lord and to Seir." And Esau said, "Let me now leave with thee some of the folk that are with me." So Esau is trying to help him out. "Here, let me leave some guys with you. Let me help you out along the journey." And he said, "What needeth it? Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord." So Esau returned that day on his way unto Seir, and Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him an house and made booths for his cattle. Therefore, the name of the place is called Succoth. and Jacob came to Shechem, a city of Shechem, which is in this land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram, and pitched his tent before the city. And he bought a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And he erected there an altar and called it El Elohi Israel. That's the God of Israel. You see things change? I remember having many conversations with you about the craziness of the families that are in Genesis. It just kind of puts you into shock, doesn't it? And yet how God continues to work with this people. These crazy individuals, right? Do you know it's only God that can take us from where we were to where we are? Don't you see it? How do we get from Jacob seeing himself as God to seeing God as being the God of Israel? How do we see all this develop and how we see it going forward and how Israel is going to become this nation and who's going to be their God? The God of Israel. And how God can take somebody so messed up. Don't you appreciate this personally? So messed up. You know, the deceived, the foolish, the disobedient, all that we were saying today, full of malice and envy and hatred, all of these things that we were talking about this morning, how God can take an individual and make us what we are. To where our new identification states, child of God. My last name's changed. My actions have changed. And when people see us as Christians, they should see somebody different because of what God has done. Because it's not us. It's Him. So if we're here tonight, are you finding contentment in God? Are you putting your faith totally in Him? Does God need to strip anything else away for you to finally see Him as God? Some of us are just hanging on. Bless me, God. You know where the blessing comes from? It's when we put our faith and trust in God. We can finally see that He is enough. That's the beauty of what the Word presents to us. Let's pray. God, we thank You so much for all that You've presented, and there's a lot of verses here tonight, but God, You have a reason for it all. You have a purpose in us seeing it and being molded by it. God, strip away all that was and allow us, push us, convict us, guide us to the point where we finally see You as enough, that we see You as God. God, that we don't just say it, but we live it. That we put our total faith, we trust in You with everything that we got, not shooting to our own reasoning. But everything's on You, God. Help us. In Jesus' name, amen.